brutality of them.
Realize what they were trying to achieve. And I guess it's especially true of Jews that live in Chutz La'aretz historically. When did, in Jewish history, assimilation and intermarriage begin? Jewish history. In Babel, in Golus Babel. In Mitzrayim, there was no intermarriage. And they came to Eretz Yisrael. Basically, intermarriage didn't exist. Our forefathers went into Golus, and they lived in Babel. So, life presents a quandary. In the economic existence, you have to deal with the society around you. To deal with the society around you, you need a certain amount of social graces to deal with them. It's part of the business process at every place and every time in history. And that creates the avenues of assimilation. Chazal wanted to, as much as we live with the non-Jewish world and work in the non-Jewish world, but that we should realize we're apart from the non-Jewish world. And we find three major pieces, they're not the only ones, but three major pieces of legislation of the Chachamim concern Stam Yeinam, that non-Jewish wine, we can't drink. For what reason? Mishum chasonus. It's a social barrier. Can't drink with people. It's hard to be good buddies with them. And I guess probably we're fortunate that even though we have today very good kosher wines, but to the largest extent the non-Jewish world doesn't look at them. It's to our advantage. Imagine every time you got invited to a non-Jewish, party, that have 20 bottles of her, Herzog. Go to one gold medals, but then what excuse would you have for not being there? And how could you not drink together with them? And now we have Bishul Akum, that food cooked by a non-Jew. 100% kosher, but it's cooked by a non-Jew, I can't eat. And then we have certain restrictions on Pasal Akum, on bread prepared by Ovid HaKochavim. We'll see that that's the least of all the restrictions, that's the least restrictive, not because Chazal did not intend to make it as restrictive as Stam Yeinam and Bishul Akum, but rather Yishalmi tells us because it was Chayei Nefesh. It proved to be too onerous a gzeirah for most people to live up to, because they lived in many, many places where the bakeries were run by non-Jews. Therefore, the only bread commercially available was produced in non-Jewish factories. So therefore, this gzeira was not accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. Now, the significance of all of this, the Gemara says in Brachos, those that have done the daf, did it a while ago, not so long ago, it's near the beginning of Masechta Brachos, a few months back. In Os Yosher reached him, we see Ad Yavor Am Choshem Ad Yavor Am Zukarisa. And Chazal tell us the meaning of this pasuk is that just as we ended Mitzrayim, Eretz Yisrael from Mitzrayim with Nisim Gluyim, when we return from Babel, we also should have come back with Nisim Gluyim. But rather, the Gemara says, in a rather shrouded comment, an enigmatic comment, Ela Shagor Machet. Some chet stood in the way, and therefore we were not zeichet to come back with the same manner of Nisim Gluyim to come to build the Bayis Sheni. But the Gemara is non-specific what that chet is. So Rameya Simcha has a very interesting thesis. Rameya Simcha writes that when the Jews are in Golos, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is often more meticulous about those mitzvahs which keep us apart from the non-Jewish world than he is in being meticulous about major mitzvahs. It says, Golos Mitzrayim, they were apart from the non-Jewish world. And yet, they were halalu ovdei avodah zarah, halalu ovdei avodah zarah. They lived apart. They had their own identity. But the culture of the non-Jewish world crept in. So they also picked up the Egyptian mode of worship. Bris Milah lapsed. Right? The Aseh Lecha Charvos Tzurim that you have at the beginning of Sefer Yeshua is because Bris Milah lapsed in Mitzrayim. So these are very, very significant halachos. Avodah zarah, Bris Milah. And yet the Kodesh Baruch Hu deemed them worthy of being redeemed and b'nisim gluyim. Whereas in Golos Bavel, by and large, the people were from. They served the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, they did the things they were supposed to do. But what was the downfall of Golos Bavel? What was their deficiency? They were too socially comfortable with the non-Jews. They didn't keep themselves apart. They integrated fully into the Persian society. He says that in Golos is the worst thing for Klal Yisrael. In Mitzrayim, with all the low ebb of our spirituality, but our identity was intact. We were Jews. We knew we were Jews. If we know that we're Jews, then there's a future for us. The decadence will pass. And we'll begin to serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam again. But if we join the non-Jewish world, then all's lost. Since that was the Gora Machet, Gora Machet Bogel, was the assimilation into the non-Jewish world. And these types of practices, Stam Yena, etc., we ate with them, we drank with them, etc., this was our problem. Now, we had to find the balance in all of this. On one hand, we have to live in a non-Jewish society, and yet maintain our own equilibrium was very difficult. And beyond Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's interesting. From looking from a perspective of Eretz Yisrael at the world, it's a different perspective than Chutz La'aretz. He expressed the fact that he felt that the Jews in Chutz La'aretz, by and large, were overly makel in these areas, to their detriment. Meaning to say that we've developed the means within the halacha to observe the letter of the halacha. We don't violate Bishul Akum, we don't violate Stam Yenom, we don't violate Pasachum, but did we preserve the spirit of the halacha too? Or did we manage to observe the letter of the law but to trash the spirit that we constructed halachically acceptable modes in which to have the social interaction with the non-Jewish world that Chazal were out to keep us away from? That was Rav Shlomo Zalman's critique. It was a very interesting critique coming from a person who did not shun the world. He wasn't an iconoclast who shunned the world. He was a person that could relate and did relate to everything that went on in the world. Every type of person in the world was comfortable with him. So it's an interesting perspective that he brought to bear. So it's a very interesting body of halacha. And how it's played out. We'll first take a little bit of a look at Bishul Akum. And then we'll compare it to Pas Akum. In fact, maybe we'll go in the other direction. We'll start with Pas Akum, and then we'll go to Bishul Akum. We'll make matters a little simpler that way. So, there's a din in the Shulchan Aruch and Kufi Yud Beis, Pashal Oyv Dei Kochovim. Osru chachomim lechol pashal amim ovde chachomim b'shem chasalas. If you can't break bread with them, and you can't drink their wine, and you can't eat the food that they cook, it's the cone, it's glatt kosher food, you know. We have the highest kosher standards here, and we still can't eat. That's a pretty big social impediment. Now, really, osur al pasha chameshes minei dogon, this applies to bread from the five species of grain. That's if aleph in the Shulchan Aruch. Then he goes to Sif Beis, and this is one of only a few places in the Shulchan Aruch, two that I know of right now where the Shulchan Aruch does this. So this was Sif Aleph. Sif Aleph tells us it's awesome. Now we go to Sif Beis. Sif Beis tells us Yesh Mekayim Hashem Kilim B'Dover V'Lokim Pas Minachtoim Ha'Ivet Yechov. They buy from a non-Jewish bakery. B'Mokom She'ein Shom Nachtoim Yisrael. That the sort of a chaver said this is only in a place where there was no established Jewish bakery. They should be shasat chak, and therefore, as the Rishonim said, it's not that we're coming after the fact, won't help us that it's a shasat chak. It's because Klal Yisrael never accepted the gzeira in all places because of the shasat chak. But the Rama adds to that, v'yeshan omrim the filu b'orkan shepas Yisrael motzoi, that it's also mutter. That even though in a place where you can buy pas Yisrael, you're still allowed to use pas palta, what's called pas palta. Avu. Pashal balabatim. Einshom mishamir balahokim. Privately produced bread. Your next door neighbor made bread. You can't use it. Ch'ik or agzerim mishum chasos. Because the gzera was made because of chasodus, so Yochel pass balabat and Yochel lisay that slum, that will open the gate to be able to break bread with them and to eat with them. Then the Shulchan Aruch adds the following: that palter means someone that produced it for commercial reasons. I mean the line. Until some point in the 19th century, the line between home and business did not really exist. Home and business were the same. Your business took place in your house. This is somewhere in the 19th century, business moved out of the house, probably with the Industrial Revolution after 1840. So then you needed a plant and a lot of machines and a lot of workers in one place. So this was a societal change, a historical change, that work and home were separated. Until that time, work and home were the same. So the question is how you draw the line in those societies between what's pas palter and what's pas balabata. You know, my grandmother, Allah Shalom, my mother's mother, when she was 12 years old, she was renowned as a phenomenal baker. So she lived in a tiny town in Russia, Ukraine, and she baked challahs and sold them for the whole shtetl when she was 12 already. Was a renowned, she was renowned that she was a remarkable baker. So what do you? So how do you draw the line? I'm sure, listen, a factory she didn't have, you know. I'm sure she nor did she have an independent place to run the business. So that's what Rama tells us, that it depends what the intention of the person making it is. Did he make it for commercial purposes or personal use? It does not depend on what shingle hangs outside his door. If he's a private person, but every once in a while, you know, he decided that he wants to produce bread for commercial purposes, that's commercial. And a commercial baker who bakes something for his own use, that's private. Simple. Just whatever the intention was, very sensibly so. Now, so here we find a very, very important distinction. And that distinction is between privately produced and professionally produced. So professionally produced bread many communities were meikel, including our own, or meikel in that halacha. Because the reason for that being, it's a very simple thing. Since it's business rather than commercial, so you really don't have the same aspect of personal involvement with it. It's a store, you go in, you buy some bread and you go home. It's not a personal, that your neighbor baked you a loaf of bread and brought it to you. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that even though we have a heter for pas nachtam or pas balabatam, your next door neighbor made bread, and there were places in the world where bread was very, very little issue. And bread was eaten in many places historically without any hashkoch at all. Why? Because the normal baking methods were 100% kosher. You know, they did not, it was baked on a hearth without fats. On, you know, which when you use pans, you have to use fats to get it out. It shouldn't singe to the pan. And it was baked with just, you know, flour and water, a little sugar, a little salt, whatever, but there were no foreign ingredients put in. That's the way the whole society worked in many places. Maybe it could be, let's say, in a bakery, maybe it was a separate, or they considered that it was hot enough that it was always burned out. But bread was, in many places, they were very liberal about the use of bread. So, this is when it comes to pas. So, pas we have the halacha. Why didn't they accept the gzera? Because it was mishum chaye nefesh.
Sfardim use the same clothes we use?
Sfardim, except that the mechaber is more machmer in one prat. The mechaber says that you can only use pas palter only if there's no Jewish bakery around. I don't know. In these areas, what's happened is the Sephardim, in fact, tend, by and large, to follow Ashkenazi shittas in our communities. And we'll see in Bishul Lachem, it's even more pronounced. And the reason for that being, just their Rabbonim felt that it's usually been in an overwhelming Ashkenazi society that it's a shasat chak for them to be able to stick to their own shittas, which tend to be more machmer in these areas, and therefore they've tended to paskin that the talmidim should follow Ashkenazi shittas, and this we'll see. In Bishul Akum, this is the case. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Bishul Akum.
In Bishul Akum, they require.
That's in the Shulchan Aruch what they require, but many of their rabbonim tell their people to be meikel. Follow Ashkenazi shittas, and also when it comes to meat are even more machmer, much more machmer than we are. Our glatt kosher is treif according to them, and yet most Sfardim, it's a relatively recent phenomenon, the Beis Yosef, most Sfardim are probably meikel still to use the non-Beis Yosef. So here's where we start. So we start with the issue that in past there's a distinction between privately produced and non-privately produced, commercially produced or privately produced. Yet, what happens when it comes to Bishul Akum? So Bishul Akum is also a question of chasonos. It shouldn't be so easy to eat with non-Jews.
I have lunch tomorrow.
That's why Chazal made the gzeiros, because of the fact that we have so often to break bread with them that they wanted us not to get too comfortable doing it.
But the difference is, one thing is to eat with them. What they made a gzeiros even when you're not eating with them, if you just bought their produce.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, you know, that way it would stick. It's not only, there's a separate Yisroel, but really with, you know, with non-Jewish parties, it's a whole separate parsha. That's not for now. Now, when it comes to Bishul Akum, so we'll see soon the halachas, but in Bishul Akum, in the Shulchan Aruch, we don't find any distinction between commercially produced and privately produced. In Bishul Akum, there were more machmer, which would seem to stem from the fact that, as the Yerushalmi says, that bread is chayei nefesh. You know, until recent times, even in European society, the principal food was bread. That was the staple. Yeah. And Mir Yeshiva, well, my shver was in his youth. I mean, the Ika food is bread. You know, good use of meat, a little list, some eggs, whatever. But bread was what it was about. You know. So we don't. So that would account for the fact that there's a distinction in the Shulchan Aruch between Bishul Akum and Pas Akum. Now, interestingly, the Rashba and the Ra'ah did debate this. If there is a heter of palta, of commercially produced by Bishul Akum. The Rashba and the Ra'ah debated it. And we have historically taken the position of the Machmirim. That there's no heter of Pas Palta. Bishul Palta. Pas Palta, yes, and Bishul Palta, no. Now you sometimes see where great Poskim have a great reach and they undertake certain things that, you know, are revolutionary in the halacha. Rav Moshe Zatzal looked over the factory scene in the United States and all the foods that were being produced there, and I guess he realized that a way to fully put them under control, that they're not going to be Bishul Akum by any of the classic methods, is, well, not at all assured we're going to achieve that end. So Rav Moshe undertook a very revolutionary step. He said the following. He said, what was the machlekes, the Rashba and the Ra'ah, if there's a din of palter by Bishul? He said, that's relevant, in other words, Bishul, which is, I guess, not chai nefesh, which we're going to be more machmer. So sof kol sof, the palter still lives down the block. You know, who owns the bakery? You know, there's some guy that lives around the corner, owns the bakery. He comes to his place, he lives in town, you know him, you deal with him. So in Bishul Akum, they were machmer for that reason. The sof kol sof, you have association with the non-Jew. And since it wasn't chaya nefesh, so they banned it. He says, what happens with a national company? Yeah, you have some company that produces for the whole America. You know, nobody, you don't deal with the guy in a personal sense. It's a very removed type of happening to the largest extent. Corporate America. So he said that there, this basis to say that everyone would agree that palta would be mutter. So Rav Moshe had a sweeping heter for factory-produced things, for Bishul Akum. Now all the kashrus agencies live in a very comfortable world because of that. Why do I say that? When you undertake a particular problem in halacha, so you like to get your 2 feet established well on the ground, firmly, on firm ground. Once you've done that, so you have your bottom line position, and you can't go wrong. So it's very nice to know when you're starting off and you want to set up a system and reasons, all types of svaras, why a plant is not Bishul Akum. If you start off with the fact that, listen, that behind the Avraham Moshe Feinstein, they said, without doing anything, it's not Bishul Akum. Then you can add, you want to be Yotze, all the more customary views. So you add all types of factors, factor A, factor B, factor C, as we'll see, to try to arrive at a broader result. Some of those propositions are questionable, if they're really solid or not. But you're in a good position, because sof kol sof, what you're articulating is the halacha. I could forego all of my additional reasons, and at the bottom line, it's still mutter. I can go to sleep at night. So now I just want to expand for expanding the heter. This is a factor. A is a factor. B is a factor. C is a factor. D is a factor. You know, I crossed swords with someone once because he took a factor that the agencies all use and applied it in a local establishment. In other words, when you're dealing with a factory-produced item, where you have Ramosha's heter, so you say, I have heter A, heter B, and heter C to go along with it. But that doesn't mean that heter A, B, and C necessarily can stand on their own merits. You want to have additional factors, good, fine. For additional factors, they're fine. But if you want to establish the din based on them, you're not in good shape. So you have to be very, very careful in the nyonim of, you know, these areas to know what's just a snip local, it's an extra factor, and what's a heter in its own right. So let's just take a look at the basics of Bishul Akum. That's what we came for tonight. Let's look at the basics of Bishul Akum. So we'll start off with the following.
Yes, your box not here. I have to do this. The practice for when he goes to Israel.
We're making him come every Tuesday. Right? Question is, how much has to be done by a Jew? How much has to be done by a Jew to remove the restriction of Bishul Akum? So the Sfaradim have a pretty high standard. And I want to examine it from two different ways, because sometimes one aspect of it is not realized. So according to the Sfaradim, the Jew has to turn on the fire under the food, while the food is there. In other words, let's put it this way. Normally what they do is the Jew comes and he takes the pot of food and he puts it onto the fire, and that's how you remove Bishul Akum. So the act of Bishul, what's the act of Bishul? The act of Bishul is taking the food and putting it onto the fire, so that's done by a Yid. That's the Sfaradish standard for that, which would preclude, as we'll see, all the things we Ashkenazim do. Now, I once had someone ask me the following shayla, Menachem Rottenberg, that when he started to get a significant amount of Sfardim in YCQ, so he wanted the kitchen to function in a fashion that it would fulfill the Sfardim Shashidis and Bishul Akum to. Now, his problem was, he had at that time, I believe, an elderly woman was the cook there, and there was no way she could take the big commercial pots and carry them or put them on the fire.
Can they just turn on the fire after the fire?
So that's what you need to realize. You have to do the mice of Bishul. So if you put the pot on the stove and then she puts the fire on, she also did the mice of Bishul. It's the same thing in reverse, but you just have to focus on it. So that's the Sfar the Shashita.
Would the
Sfaradim
hold that the fire's on and you put the pot on the fire? That's also good?
Yeah, well.
Even though
that's not relevant to them. The Maisa Bishul was done by a Yid. That's what's important.
That requires every time that has to be. It's not like you could turn the oven on.
No, you can't. For example, now we have in Starkist tuna fish, which is produced, I believe, in Puerto Rico, one of the places where they produce it. So every year, they make a run for the Rabbanut HaRoshit in Eretz Yisrael, which is kosher to Pesach, in fact. And for 2 weeks, they send a mashkiach down to the plant in Puerto Rico. And one of the things that he has to do is to push, they steam the fish. That's how they cook it, in a steam room. So he has to take every cart of fish and push it physically into the steam room. So that, because the Rabbanut HaRoshit will not give a hashgacha, it's not kosher for the Sfaradim as well. So this actually does take place. Yeah. So that's the Sfaradish Shita. Now Ashkenazim have their own view of all of this. Significantly different than the Svarim. The Ramah tells us the following. So that was the Mechaber sheet that we talked about. And the Mechaber says, well, Yad Lokas, Aish Mailomer, the lighting of the fire is irrelevant. No, because so we'll see. In Pas Akum, it makes a difference. In Pas Akum, if a Jew puts some fuel into the fire, that's enough to remove the Easter of Pas Akum. The Yesh Kolkum, the Ramah says, is Sfirulu, the Hadlokas Aish, Ochite Begacholim Ahane, the Indian Bishop, Kumal, the Indian Pas. That lighting the fire or stoking the coals of the oven to raise the heat is enough to remove the din bishul akum, just as it does by pas. And that's enough to give it a din of pas yisrael. So the Ramah writes, and this is v'chei noyagin, and this is the Ashkenazi shita. So according to the Ashkenazi shita, what we do, it's a shaila, do we fulfill this or not? You know, so if you have a place, preferably, according to the Ashkenazi Shita, when the Mashkiach comes in the morning, he should turn on all the stoves and light them, he actually light them. Now he brings the following, the Yeshimer, a third Shita, Da'afilo lo chita yisro, lo hishtuch shom kisem. He didn't stoke the coals, he didn't put any wood into the fire. This is view number 3, and that is that as long as the fire source was the fire of a Jew, so then even though a guy actually lit the fire in this oven, it's still mutter. So we have the three shitas. We have the mechaber shita, where you have to do the actual cooking, the ma'isa bishul. We have the first shita in the Ramah that a Jew has to light the fire, and then shita number 3 that if a guy lights the fire from the fire of a Jew, that also suffices.
Turning on a Jewish oven count? There's no violent?
No. If the guy turns, no. Has to be. So now the question is, typically in our society, we're makel if there's a pilot light. So the shaila is, does the pilot light fulfill the din of the second sheet of the Ramah, or only of the third sheet of the Ramah?
In other words, somewhere or other you arrange for a Jew to light the pilot light?
Yeah. The rabbi comes and lit the pilot light. That's typically what they do. And then when the guy puts on the oven, it's lighting from the pilot light that the Jew lit.
Industrial ovens still have pilot lights?
I don't know. I'm not sure. They have, today in industry, they have other methods. I mean, there were places that had. I don't know. Today, in the digital age, there are totally new possibilities. In the digital age, you can sit here in New York and light the ovens and the whole world just from your computer.
It seems to me that it would be it's more like it's the guy taking from the source of the Jew. It's not the Jew's fire alone, because you just cut off the gas line. When you turned off the flame, it's no longer
Or Shaila's, which it is. Now, principally, we follow Shita number 2 and not Shita number 3. Shita number 3, if you look at the Talmud with the Achronim, they are more accepting of Shita number 2 than they are of Shita number 3. So the Shaila is, do we fulfill this din? So, I once argued before Rabbi Yoshev that we're Mekayim Shita number 2 with our pilot lights. And I didn't do a bad job, he bought. He put a caveat in, but he bought. And what did I tie it up? I tied it the following. That sof kol sof, how does it light?
Gas.
You open the gas, yes. But then the fire of the yid lights the gas. So it's not the same as the guy coming and putting a piece of paper and taking the fire, going down the block and lighting another oven, puts a match and lights a match with my fire and then goes someplace else. My fire lit the gas.
It's like adding wood to the fire. The guy would add wood, it's still your fire.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to title. So I wanted to title with our pilot lights, we would fulfill sheet number two. Because the Maya says, it's my fire that lit. It's not the guy took the fire. It's my fire lit the gas.
Your fire couldn't cook anything.
Okay, that's something else. It doesn't have to be necessarily. That's another issue we'll come to. The Chochmas Adam says that if I lit the fire, even if it's not enough to cook, it happens. That it's stated in Chochmas Adam that it's fine.
Let's use an example of where.
So what happened was like this. Let me finish. So Rabbi Yoshev said to me like this, that he has his understanding of day number two, and I'll show you a little bit where he's coming from right away, is that a yid has to do a maisa. And mele, the yid is not doing a maisa of lighting this fire. But he said, if you're dealing with, it's a place which is a Jewish-owned establishment, Bebeis HaShem Yisrael. So Bebeis HaShem Yisrael, there are much more heterim and Bishul Akum. So Amela, in that context, he'd be masking that you fulfilled it, you would consider it fulfilling the second sheet of the Ramah. Now you have, for example, it was a Shaila like this. This was a Shaila, Chassidim had the Shaila in Europe. And they wanted to produce Pas Yisrael instead of Pas Palter in a factory. Now there were no Yidden that lived in the area of this factory. So what they wanted, this was before we had the computer, the digital operations that we have today. Today the Mashgiach can just go online and light the ovens, you know, hit whatever, and started from his house. He'd sit in New York and light the ovens and put in Indonesia.
That's considered that he lights.
Yeah, direct. Mama's direct. You go and you turn on the, in other words, the let's say they open the gas and whatever, or you hit the switches which open the gas, and you hit the switch which causes the thing to spark. You can put the electric on. You can put on the electric. One of my chaverim calls me up. He says, where was he? Was in Eretz Yisrael or in Europe? He says, and I'm taking care of the air conditioning in my building in New York now. Someone complained it was too hot, whatever, so I just went on the computer and I adjusted the air conditioning. It's a different world we live in. So they had like an automatic, you know, time clock, and it would put on the oven at a certain time. So a yid put this in motion. So does this suffice to take care of the din of that it's not pas palter, it's pas yisrael? So the Maisa, they could not find among the Rabbanim anyone that wanted to be Meikel. And there's a Gro, there's a Mashmos and a Gro that it needs a real Maisa. It's not just enough. If it wouldn't be a real Maisa, then a Groma is not enough to remove the din of Bishul Akum or to make it into Pas Yisrael.
What was the problem that he set a timer but he didn't actually flick on the switch?
There was no yid there to flick on the switch. So that time they were timing, that's not more than a grumble. And therefore it should not remove the din of paspalta. And Lumai said they did not find anyone that wanted to be maker for them.
This digital thing is also a grumble.
No, the digital is not a grumble. The digital is direct. It's not that I light the oven right here and now. I put on the gas and I light the oven. The switches, just your... Let's say it's an electric oven.
Yeah.
Okay, you understand that I can go on the computer and put the electric on and light the oven? So why is that it's not a grumble? That's a direct action. I put one online and I flip the switch. So you can do whatever. In today's world, I realized this about 20, 25 years when the computer started to rise, that this is obviously going to happen, and it goes on today. Shkichim get online and that's it. They put the ovens on and whatever, a factory, wherever. You know, they have the... But this is the inyan that you need a maisa. That's the word of Rabbi Yoshua principally learned the second day. Yeah? And they said there is a raya from the Gro to that. The Gro even, but then because because the second day really extended the din of pas akum, as the Rama said, to bishul akum, and that it's enough if you deal with the fire. But there is a raya for the grom that you need a maisa. Grom is not enough. So that's where I presume Rabbi Yosha was coming from. And the Beis Hashem Yisrael, he was willing to be samech on another tzad in that shayla. Now, principally, what is done in kosher establishments, which don't have a full-time mashgiach. So, if it's a situation where a mashgiach is readily can come running, so that's easy enough. But if it's not a situation, not every commercial situation has that possibility. And at the very least, they teach the non-Jews that if the fire goes out, to light it from an existing pilot light, which is still burning. And then when the mashgiach comes, they'll tell them, they'll put it out and relight it, appropriately. But this is...
That way they fulfill the second sheet of the Rama, at least.
What?
By having them pilot line.
It's the second sheet of the Rama. That's the sheet number three. In other words, there, you're going to a different pilot light. In other words, you're lighting it, and you're lighting it from a fire, which is, with the source of it, is a Jewish fire. And then you're taking it to another gas, which is totally removed from that first fire. This is typically what goes on. Now, in home settings, you have to be very, very careful. And if a non-Jew is in the house and they have responsibilities to cook, so you have to be sure that at the very least, there's someone to put on the fire for them. And otherwise, the food's going to be bishalakum. And unfortunately, there are way, way too makel in this. I'm talking people that are very, very frum. I mean, there's not a question, in other words, that they're generally lax about halacha. No, they're not generally lax about halacha. But this, the realization of the limitations of Bishul Akum, many people do not realize. So these are the basic. I don't want to, Be'ez Hashem, I think the next year we'll start to take a look at what the Virin HaTerim are. One halacha that is also, it's very, widely diverging views of how to look at this halacha. It is a halacha that's something which is not oila shulchan malachim, which wouldn't be served at a state banquet. That's the literal meaning of Bishul Akum. So, is not included in the Iser of Bishul Akum. I presume the Cheshbon is, because, at a party, when you're involved with others, you probably don't serve, low-class stuff. But the Shaila was how to take this, what does Eino Oila Shulchan Malochah mean? Does it mean that they have to serve it at a state dinner? And if they wouldn't serve it at a state dinner, that's not in the realm of Bishul Akum. Or all this took an Eino Ola Shulchan Malochah meant it's junk food. Something in the middle, it wasn't the highest class, but on the other hand, it wouldn't necessarily serve it at a state dinner, was not a heter. So there's always a constant tension about this in terms of what is Eino Ola Shulchan Malochah and what's not. I presume that the principal heter for the potato chips, that's what I imagine, potato chips are cooked. They're fried at all, it's cooking, it's not baking, and it's not bread. So I imagine that a principal heter is that they're not oila shulchan malochim. In other words, they're certainly, I think by either measure, you would consider them low class.
Or maybe it's...
Who said that?
The mashgiach turns on the oven.
Not all places have a... There are many commercial places that don't have a mashgiach at all there. You take Harris, for example.
Yeah.
There's the OU will send the guy sporadically to check the plant, but nobody sits there. The nature of commercial kashrus is that you don't, there's a paper trail to whatever's done, and you really have to steal massively to make it worth your while. You know, you'll sneak, it doesn't pay to sneak in one bottle of trefa oil. It's not going to do anything for you. You need to do things on a scale which is huge. And it's hard to hide those things. So that's the nature of commercial kashrus.
Is microwaving considered also cooking? In
not everyone considers it that way. Most of Rav Moshe Zatzal, I believe, considered it to be regular cooking. Rav Shlomo Zalman did. And there are others that take a different view. I mean, I, you know, tend to follow the view that it's the same as regular cooking. So this is just always a little introduction to the inyonim of Bishul Akor and Pasak.
I knew that the time was going to be the same for the time.